Unreal 9. We were talking about the events of the 27th of May, 1942, and you were in this unenviable position in your slip trench on your own with the tanks all round you under fire from British
And it isn't nice on your own. There's no getting away from it. I mean, I've been seen an awful lot of action and have usually been with somebody, and you've got someone to talk to, and it's completely different. I suppose there's some sort of loner type people could do it, but it was very, very different cup of tea, and £25 is a very, very nasty. And I was so worried about whether there was German infantry there. Well,
there was. Did you have any weapons with you?
Not a thing. Anyway, I popped my head up. Oh, two tanks went right forward, and this one tank stayed behind. It had got a longer barrel on it. There were German ones. They were either Mark 3s or Mark 4s or something. And I wondered if the one with the longer barrel on had got a bigger gun on it, because it had a much longer barrel on it.
You mean the longer range?
So I presume it could stay back and fire at the guns, our guns, whilst these two went a bit nearer, because they crawled right over the guns and drove over them, didn't they?
That's B-troop there.
The B-troop, they went over over B-troop. Taylor got the DCM for that. The story there is that McNamara was Taylor's gun layer, and this tank was coming straight for the gun. And McNamara looked through his telescopic sight. Well, if the thing was so near, you wouldn't see anything. There would just be a grey mass in front of the telescopic sight, wouldn't there? Frank Taylor was telling to fire, and he just turned round to Frank Taylor like this off his gun seat, says, "I can't see a fucking thing." And Taylor said, "Pull the bloody trigger, man." So he pulled the trigger just as the tank was going to climb over the gun, and it blew the turret right off, and I think killed everybody off the tank, and the tank carried on and climbed over the gun. And that's where I think I don't know, nobody's ever told me, but I reckon that's where Taylor told him, you know, that's where he got his DCM.
Who told you that story?
Well, Taylor told me the story about Taylor himself told me the story about McNamara.
About the sight of
the gun layer. He was saying, "For God's sake, pull the trigger. Fire, man, fire." He said, "I can't see a fucking thing." But I thought that. But if you knew McNamara, because he'd been a he'd been an apprentice. What do you call him? What people bury folks? Funeral. He's learning to be a funeral director. You know, what do you call the damn things?
I know what you mean. Yes.
And he'd been on a course of embalming. I remember him telling us stories about embalming bodies. Ever such a dry humour he'd got. I don't know what happened to him, whether he got killed or not, I don't know. I think he did, because the tank climbed over the gun. Anyway, I was on this I was back being shot at by these guns, and these two tanks that were near me went right forward, and this other one stayed. And I kept thinking, well, if that bugger goes forward, will he bury me? I'm going to jump out. And then I saw people walking about on the position, and the guns had stopped firing, and there were Germans wandering around looking for quite a lot, the German infantry, so they should have been, they must have been behind the tanks. And I saw one or two chaps, those chaps I'd left behind, walking about with their hands up. So I came out with my hands up, and I've been watching this telly this last day about walking about with a hand. It isn't long before your arms begin to ache and you rest your hands on top of your head, because you can't, you know. I've been watching it on the telly with these Iraqis. There's nothing. You haven't sunk any lower than you can sink when you become a prisoner of war.
That's how you felt?
Yeah, you're absolutely dead low. And we're all lined up, and some bright spark next to me, I said, what are they going to do? He says, well, he says, they reckon tanks never don't take prisoners. Well, it made common sense to me. If you can't, tanks can't take prisoners, can they? Not if they've got to be busy doing something. But they lined us all up, took a pay books off us, and the two officers started, you know, they were squabbling, German officers, but they were yakking to each other. And well, I said to this chap, what's going on? He says, well, tanks don't take prisoners. I think they're deciding whether they're going to shoot us or not. But anyway, they didn't. They left one tank round, and there was a lot of us. There was Indians as well, and they left one tank to guard the lot of us. And they carried on fighting. And I think we got a little bit of water then from the Germans.
Now, before we start on your POW experiences, you say, what did you start off with? Because that's quite important sometimes. What were you wearing? What did you have with you? What kit? That sort of thing. When you were taken prisoner.
Well, I don't know where I'd got it. I'd got my leather jerkin. You see? I suppose because it was early in the morning and it was cold. I already got my leather jerking on. But somewhere I picked up a blanket. But I don't know whether it was then. Because it was a cold night that night and I'd got to... And that Wigan Walker chap was there and he was cold and he'd got nothing on except his shirt and shorts.
Did you have shorts or...?
I'd got those shorts on. Those terrible, ugly things. They were mosquito shorts. They were like that,
down
and folded up, and you could bring them up like knickerbockers and button them up here.
By the crotch,
by
the top
crotch,
of your leg.
Something like that, you see. Look, I was such ugly-looking things, but I was damn glad of them, because at night I was able to put them down to there.
To your ankle.
Yeah, and I think it was something to do with mosquitoes or something, so as you didn't get... bitten by mosquitoes, but they were ever such ugly looking things.
What else did you have? Yeah, and you had a shirt, I presume.
I'd got a shirt on, and that. And that's it.
You didn't have your kit bag or anything like that handy with you?
Well, I'd really only just had. I'd had my breakfast and gone to the lavatory, and that was about it. So, well, you know.
So what happened then? They left you with this tank?
Guarding us, and then they got more and more prisoners, and then they got a lot of... The Germans were all right to us, and they gave us a drink. Then they went off, and they sent some Italians to guard us. And when they'd got about 1,000 of us, I can't remember, they started marching us. There was some... Italians with a... There was an armoured car at the front, an armoured car at the back, and a lorry load of Italian... A little van with all the Italian soldiers in it, and one... A couple on motorbikes. There was an Italian sergeant major on a motorbike. He said he'd be in charge of us. And they started marching us off. And I kept marching, and I don't know... And it seemed a hell of a long time before we got any water again. I think they do it on purpose. A, they can't get it to you. They're busy fighting a battle, aren't they? And B, that if you're hungry and thirsty, you haven't got much fight in you, have you? Especially if you're a prisoner, your morale is right down there.
How many of the South Knots were you with? I mean, in this thousand, I mean, was
there
a group?
Only what was left of B Troop. I don't think there was a lot of B Troop left, because, you see, there was a few of us, but it was Indians and...
Was there anyone you knew from, besides...
Yes, well, there's one or two from B Troop that I knew, but there's quite a few of them killed, you know, and wounded. There's a chap called Tomlinson, very badly wounded, and that friend of mine who was... who I told you about, it was at the Opiac when I went off after those Italian prisoners. He was in charge. He was the OPAC. He got killed. Aggie Carr was killed. He was the troop captain.
And you were with... Did you stay with Wigan Walker? I mean,
yes, I was prisoner. Wigan Walker was a prisoner with me. And I would imagine we were a prisoner for about 5 days, but I'm a bit vague about
this. You were marching for 5 days?
Yeah, well, they'd march us so far and stop. They've kept us very short of water and food. And they're absolute swines, the Italians were to us.
So, did they give you water and food then?
No, they waited till we got... we never got any food, water that day. And after when we got really thirsty, we went past a German position. And I went up to a German cookhouse, and the German cook gave me a jerry can full of water. Whole 5 gallons of water. And I was taking it off to my pals, and an officer stopped me, an English officer. He says, "What's that you've got there?" I said, "Water." So he made the whole lot of us, well, a hell of a lot of us, queue up, and I had to pour everybody a drink of water out of my can of water, and I wasn't very pleased about it. And we went on right to the very end. I got one drink out of it. To be fair to the officer, I don't think he had a drink.
Was that a South Knots officer?
No, wasn't a South Knots officer. Well, if he was, he might have been one of these new ones that didn't know. He was about a captain, I think. But I'd got this 5 gallons of water, and I was taking it back to Wigan Walker and all the South Knots, and that was the end of that. So the Germans were treated us well.
Now, what was so bad about the way the Italians treated you? Was it...
Well, they're like that. They're when they're winning, they're nasty, and when they're frightened, they're useless. I mean, this war that's being, I'm not decrying what's happened. I think it's marvellous what they've done out in the Gulf, the organisation. But they weren't fighting Germans and they weren't fighting Japanese.
But what about, in what way were they nasty? Do you see what I mean? I mean, what did they do that was...
Well, it was this Sergeant Major that was so nasty that was in charge of us.
What did he do?
He was just very, very unpleasant, and the fact we were... no water and food, and he was in charge of us. And that it was our theory that if they kept us really down, we hadn't got a deal of fighting us.
Did you get... And during this, you thought it was about 5 days. I know you don't know.
No, we don't know.
But...
It seemed a hell of a long time.
Did you get any food at all during that?
Well, the only meal I had was one of these cobs of bread. Hello. It was... bigger than a cob, but not twice as big as a cob. It was about that big.
About 3.5 inches by about 2.5 tall.
And we had one of those between two of us, and a very, very small tin, about that big, about that deep, of what they call carne.
What was that?
It's meat. It looked like mutton. But at the time you'd shared that between two of you, it was nothing. And that's the only meal I got.
What was the carne like? I mean, was it any good?
Well, when you're that hungry, anything's good. I mean, I would have liked a tin of dog meat, chappy. I could eat. When you're that hungry, you could... Now, what I'm going to tell you about now is, if we go back... It's important to do with this. One of these days when I was in the base depot, and there's a lot of people hanging about doing nothing, they give them little lectures to pass the time. And I went to this lecture given to us by somebody, a major of some sort, what do's and don'ts when taken prisoner. And he said, and it was common sense, the sooner you escape, the easier it is. The longer you're a prisoner, the further and further you are away from home. You know, they eventually get you right into Italy and then, you know, miles away. He says, the sooner you escape, the easier it is for you. So I started talking to people about escaping, you see. And everybody, a lot of people wanted to talk about it, but when it came to doing it, it was a different cup of tea. And but I got in touch with this chap, this new officer, straight out from him, the one who came and told me to come and dig in. You know, I want everyone to come and help dig against it.
But you don't know his name?
Yes, his name was Rickards.
Rickards?
Rickards. And he'd just joined us from this new thing. And he wanted to escape. And he'd got... He'd found two or three more that wanted to go. And there was a major there. And this major had got a compass. And he was going to go as well. But he was one of these sods who, you know, always wanted to put it off till tomorrow. You know. We were supposed to be going one night and we didn't go. We were supposed to be going the next night and we didn't go. And
all the time you were getting presumably.
Yes,
we
walked. You're marching a bit further each day.
And you had less food and less water. Yeah.
And then anyway, one day, there must have Rickards. I reckon Rickards. I don't know whether this is true, but I suspect he went and pinched this compass off this major. I'll never know to this day whether, but anyway, because Rickards and all the others had gone. But it was me. I must have, when they decided to go, they couldn't find me, you see. But I see this major was still there. He hadn't gone, but Rickards had gone. So I wonder if Rickards had... And then they couldn't find me and they'd gone without me.
Who else went with Rickards?
Well, there was two or three of them. I can't remember who it was, but Rickards was definitely... one of them, and I think, I've often meant to ask him this, because I have seen him once since the war, I reckon he pinched the compass and went.
And what about Wigan Walker? Which party was he in?
Oh, Wigan Walker was in a bad state. He was in a hell of a state.
Wigan Walker. In what way?
Well, the heat, the no water and no food. Big fat bloke Wigan Walker was. Fat and lazy, Wigan Walker was. Nice chap, but he was... He looked in a bad state when I went. And I couldn't find it, you know. So I eventually found someone who said they'd go with me. So this was the next morning. Now, these other chaps had set off at night, you see. And I think they had a compass. Anyway, I went with this chap called Simpson. Not the Simpson who sang. This was another Simpson.
Now, how did you get away? Was there any wire or anything around?
No, we were just being marched along the desert.
And what? How did you bivouac at night?
We didn't. We just slept where we were. One night, they made us all... This was the night we got the bully beef, the cob of bread and the carny. And they parked us near... a great big convoy of ammunition and supplies. Uh-huh. And that's where we spent the night. And the RAF came with the hurry bomber things, fighter bombers, and attacked this thing. Of course, we were ever so near to it. Well, I got underneath about three or four Indians, Sikhs or whatever they were. It was a hell of a bloody shindig there. And then when they'd gone, the ammunition kept blowing up in these trucks and bullets and things were all whizzing about. But they parked us there. We thought, well, if they're going to bomb this, they can bomb the prisoners as well, you know. And anyway, that was a night, about a couple of nights before that. And come this morning, where the others had gone, I found this chap, Simo, said he'd go with me. And as we're going past, we passed a derelict, as we're all been, there's about, I don't know whether there was 1,000 of us or what, maybe there were more, but we're spread out over a big area, because stragglers and There was an armoured car at the front and an armoured car at the front and this motorcycle driving round us. And we got behind, we got underneath a vehicle, a smashed out vehicle, got underneath it. And some silly sod came up to us and said, "What are you doing?" We told him to bugger off, you know, just attracting attention to us. And and we lay there and stayed there until the whole prison column was miles out of sight, you know. And when we thought there was nobody about, first of all, in the back of this lorry, found an onion. Just one onion. Well, we ate that between us. And we found this onion, and we had that between us, and we found an old Italian rifle with a fold, a little bayonet that folds up underneath it, you know, sort of hinge thing, useless. And we tried to, with the radiator of this truck, we tried to make a hole in the radiator to get water out of it. Well, it started to dribble out of this radiator, and we lay on our backs and held our mouth open and drank this rusty water. And got a drink that way. Didn't get much. Then we set off. Now, I had a theory, and it was because it depends which bit of Africa you are, if it's shaped a bit, if it's African coast like that. If it, sunlight in the morning, when the sun comes up, it comes up in the east. You looking towards the, what you think's towards the sea, sort of turn right, and that's the direction I wanted to be in. But I've looked at the map since, where the position we were at, it was the coast came round a bit like that, so we were wrong. But we set off in that direction, and we kept walking, find derelict trucks and try to get water out of radiators and things like that. And then all of a sudden, a German armoured car appeared. And we started to run. Well, they just gave us a burst over our heads, you know, shot at us, bullets went all around us, so we stood with our hands up. So we're in the back, captured again. Well, they put us on, we climbed onto the, they made us climb onto the armoured car, and they were inside it, we were on the top. Because we were, you know, disheartened and our morale was right down there, you know. And we were on top of this armoured car, and we could hear their wireless going and all sorts of orders coming to them. And strapped on the side of this armoured car were these two of those potato masher things. And I thought to myself, well, if I knew how to work one of these things, I could lob it in and do for them. But I didn't know what you had to do. I'd imagine there was a bit of string coming out the bottom of the wooden handle. I don't know whether if you pull that. But I'd got no fight in me. So I didn't do anything about that. But it was there. I was really no better than those Italian prisoners that I'd caught a few months before. Got no fight left in me. And then all of a lot of chattering going on this German radio. And they stopped and they said we'd got to get off. And they gave us a drink of water and told us which direction to go back to the prisoner of war line, you know, where they, you know. But they'd obviously had some orders. And what it was the British had managed to do a little bit of a counter-attack in advance, you see. And they told us to go this way, and when they went rushing off in that direction, and when they were out of sight, we carried on in the opposite direction to what they told us. And we came across a tank battle. It was just luckily, I don't know how far we'd been marched as prisoners, because we hadn't marched very fast, and then the British had done a bit of an advance, just a temporary one, you know. And I've often looked in books to try and find out what exactly did happen then, at that, you know, somewhere around about the what was it, 3rd of June or something like that, it would be. And I reckon we came across these tanks, and I reckon we ran through a bit of a minefield. And then we were so desperate, and we ran through it, and we ran to the first British tank and sort of knocked on the door. And they said, "What the hell are you doing?" You know. And we sat behind it. They gave us a 2-gallon tin of water, and we sat behind this tank and drank all this water between us. Whole tin. And they sent an armoured car out, came and picked us up, and then I got up and walked into this armoured car. I could hear the tummy water squelching about inside my tummy. And they took us back to brigade headquarters or something, and we were interviewed by an intelligence officer. He wasn't very pleased with me because I hadn't been taking any notice of, you know, German dispositions and what tanks and things I'd seen. And I think he thought I wasn't much use to them. And then they sent me back to the regiment. What's left, you know, because it was only B troop that went down the drain. I went back to the regiment and had a meal and cleaned up and a spare. They put me on a spare. They were getting ready to move forward to the Knightsbridge position, you see. And they put me on a 4-5 howitzer, an old one they'd got hold of somewhere, and they made a spot team up of that, you see, and I was put on this 4-5 howitzer. And then the fitters came round and had a look at it and decided it wasn't safe to use it. So I was spare. And because I'd been a prisoner and I was spare, they found something for the other chaps to do. Oh, Simo was with me, you see. But I think he'd gone back to being a batman or something, so he was all right. He went off to be a batman for somebody, I think. And as I was spare, they sent me down to the echelon wagon, you know, right to the back, to where it was set, to B echelon, I think they called it, for a rest. But then the regiment moved forward into Knightsbridge, went down the drain, and we were all that was left. Except for Major Daniels, who managed to get out of it somehow. And so we set off down to Cairo.
Yo estuve en Vietnam, se fue en el 75.
Nosotros fuimos por 2 años.
We were there during 2 years.